about from the very beginning, how important it is to have risk assessment capabilities. This document actually pulls the data together, talks about the different kinds of risk. There was one that we just discussed about the risk between repair versus entering without a repair. That's covered in this document in one of these matrices. And as you just heard, it was the fact that they have this ability to pull this data together and assess it during flight has contributed significantly to the closure criteria for 641 with regard to inspection. The fact that they actually baselined this and NASA accepted it as a baseline version on April 12th is further evidence that NASA management continues to support this development. And we think that's very important that they continue to do so. And finally, we'd just like to recognize that the known values for critical damage and critical debris are key and will always be key to the ability of this process to actually support the complex decision making that's required. These documents lay out, as I said earlier, these timelines. So in order to understand the timelines, you have to understand the sensor capabilities. To understand the sensor capabilities, you have to understand what they're looking for. In order to understand how long it takes to analyze the data, you have to understand exactly the refinement that's required. All of this comes together in these processes that are documented in these documents and that the decision makers have come to count on. So for example, the debris impact analysis and all of the debris data that we've been looking at is important in this process for cueing where the sensors look for focused inspection on orbit. So this is truly the place where all of these different things come together in a very interconnected way. And it all stems back to an understanding of critical debris, the size you're looking for, and then critical damage and what critical damage is. And so as those values are refined and changed and so forth, it directly affects this process and the decision making that's possible relative to the inputs from this process. Next chart. So our summary. First of all, I think it's very important that we all commend, and I think the subpanel all agrees, that we commend the OIP and damage assessment developers for their efforts. They basically started from scratch. They had never had these sensors, some of these sensors before. They had certainly never had the magnitude or the number of these sensors before. They started from scratch and developed a process that cuts across a whole lot of different factors, a lot of different components, a lot of different people with different responsibilities. And they've designed and documented and then instituted a very sophisticated training program that included a variety of levels, a building block training program. And even, I would say, from their training, they did it as an experimentation process where they fed back what they learned from the training into their assessment, into their process, and updated their documentation. So that's a big job, big effort, started from scratch, and they've come a very, very long way. It's also a process that, in our view, should not be thought of as done. Okay, they baselined it, but as I said earlier, that means they baselined it as a work in progress. Fundamentally, it's our view that this should never be considered complete, that this is something that you will always learn from. You'll learn more about the data that you're getting. You'll learn more about what you're looking for. You'll learn more about how to assess it quickly. And you'll learn a lot more about how the decision makers make decisions and the information they need to do so. Some of that information will be gained, very critical, valuable information will be gained during 114 itself. And we recommend that NASA developers pull together whatever's available from 114 and incorporate that into the OIP and the damage assessment annex for future missions. And that will be invaluable to supporting that. We also suggest that NASA should continue to resource and support this development team in all of their efforts so that they can continue to refine their processes. Also, we recommend or suggest that to our ASAP follow-on effort that this is a candidate. The OIP integrates all the information regarding the health of the TPS. So if you look at this process, you end up looking at just about every aspect of both the detection processes as well as the health of the TPS issues. So looking at this really gets you into all of the issues that we've been looking at in a large way, and therefore makes it a nice candidate for follow-on. It's just our input to ASAP. They are certainly will make their own assessments of what they do, but we think it's very important. And finally, we'd like to point out that this is a very as we've said, difficult and intense effort to integrate information in a cross-NASA way. This is a cross-NASA effort where people in all different parts of the organization have had to sign up and agree to provide things of a certain quality at a certain time, and they're all pulling together to complete this. And we see that as a potential model for other NASA information assessment processes that they could use to support this complex decision making that's always a part of risk assessment in any shuttle flight. And that concludes my remarks. Are the subpanel members, if anybody wants to jump in, add anything I left out?
Comments? Well, people are thinking I would like to thank the Integrated Vehicle Assessment subpanel for the work that they've done in addition to their other duties. But the work that you've done in working with the NASA and understanding, and I believe helping guide them toward the OIP and that approach, and so it's very commendable work, and I'm truly appreciative of the work that y'all have done here. Any comments or questions for the IVASP? Okay. I'm going to jump out here then. If not, I recommend that based upon the data presented that the IVASP's presentation that we accept the observations and summary in this presentation for the record and we'll reflect that in our report. So, okay. Still got a few more things to do. First, I would like to make the point that we do have a memorandum of understanding with the Aerospace Safety Advisory Panel relative to the transition of, I'll call it items that we will recommend to them that they continue to follow after we go into the sunset. And those items are in, we began accumulating those and we're refining those, and those will be reflected in our report. So we're planning on doing that. Likewise, it has it's been brought to my attention and to others that the various members of the task group have observations that they are in various forms of formulating and vetting against some of the work that we just finished doing that they might like to bring forward either for an individual representation or for consideration by the task group to support as a task group observation. And I want to acknowledge that we have those out there. At this time, don't necessarily know how they will fall out, but we will provide a way of dispositioning those. There may be some that are I'm going to make an observation about this, and most of these that I'm talking about right now should not be related to the operational readiness or safety of STS-114, but may be related to our overall charter of being able to make observations relative to readiness, operational readiness and safety. But I would ask if, with the knowledge that we're acknowledging that there may be some that aren't quite ready to be brought forward, and certainly at this point are personal observations, if there's anyone that would like to delineate any that they would be bringing forward in the future. Anybody have some of those?
On behalf of Dan Crippen, who unfortunately did have to leave early, he left me some notes, and I will probably be very inarticulate in translating these, so excuse me. But what I'd like to do is just to outline a few general areas that he says he's thinking about in terms of observations, maybe presenting them to the entire task group at some other point, or may just offer them as personal observations. I don't know, Mr. Chairman. And I also have a few myself in some of these crosswalk, and this will just take a minute. One of the issues that he has struggled with, and I think I've heard others discussing it too, is NASA's, with the change in the workforce skill sets from when they were operating in more of an operational environment versus the developmental type of environment, that there has been different engineering talent requirements that are there, you know, that are needed, different processes that are needed, even perhaps different management approaches needed. And after the Columbia accident, it was very clear, I think, within NASA that they had transitioned from what they were operating, or from an operational mode, into really going back into the test and developmental role within NASA. And that had a lot of implications. And I think there's, I don't know if you want to call it a lesson learned or an observation, but I think that's one area he's looking at. And I believe maybe others have had that same issue in terms of kinds of talents and skill sets that are needed and what the implications might be for NASA for future programs as well. Okay. In terms of management areas, there has been some concern with respect to approaches to planning, systems engineering. I think there's been some discussion in those areas. I think the approach and bifurcation that we dealt with respect to the implementation of the ITA or SMA in terms of NASA headquarters and center, trying to ensure the center roles and yet still trying to deal with the cave of intent of direct line authority. I know Dan's been sort of thinking of areas in the sort of the management arena that he might wish to bring forward, so I've just raised those as well. The other issue is it's a very high-risk organization that requires high reliability, is the continuous need for, and maybe we just call the sustainment and development, but for very high standards of discipline, rigor, integration, systems integration, documentation of those processes, et cetera. And these have been areas in which both Dan and myself had some observations and some issues that we'd probably would like to bring forward. Another area would be lessons learned. I think both in the CABE report, it was very clear that that going from the Challenger to the Columbia, there are a number of areas of reiteration of lessons learned and problems, and that is very, very important for the future and the future of the space program, that the lessons learned process, that the sustainment of all the terrific knowledge that has been gained over the last couple of years be carried forward. And including, I think, the importance of risk assessment and the much more sophisticated approaches they've been taking in the integration of the decision-making tools and also in cumulative risk integration. You know, these are not stovepiped issues. I mean, these are things that come together in a system, in a vehicle, that have multiple impacts, and they need to be brought together. It's the same with the CABE's imagery recommendations. They may have had four imagery recommendations or inspection recommendations, but you don't really get the full effect until you put them together as an integrated whole. So again, looking at these lessons learned, the documentations, the need to constantly think, test, and challenge, you know, the assumptions, the boundaries, the knowns, the unknowns, the limitations of what we have before us or what NASA has before us in their models, peer review, just the constant need to challenge and to sustain the improvements that have been made over the last couple of years. So those are areas, and I that's one of my areas as well. And those are pretty much sort of, I think, the areas that I was looking at and the ones that Dan had left for me to carry forward with him. I know he's had some concerns about sustainment on schedule and resources, but you know, that's going to be a constant challenge. It's a constant challenge for every program in the federal government, and it will be a constant challenge for the shuttle throughout its life, particularly as we transition onto other programs, perhaps in manned spaceflight. So I would raise those as potential observations that may come forward. Again, we're just, you know, still right here at the end, so it may be premature to even be raising them, but those are some of the areas we're looking at.
Thank you, Susan. And I, like I say, those at this point are personal observations, potential personal observations that may become task group, dependent upon the way we disposition those. And, but right now, they're works in progress. Anybody else have any that they think they're going to be bringing forward? And again, you still will have the option under my general acknowledgement that there are ideas out there for observations, both that might be personal, that might be brought forward, and we'll give you the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think one of the things that we've seen here today in a number of
situations as we've looked at what the key words were and what our interpretations were in the retrospect of looking back 2 years is the CABE report was written as a static point in time, and NASA, to its credit, you know, stepped up and said we're going to embrace these findings in totality and implement the letter of those findings. Fortunately or unfortunately, the world is not a static environment. The environment for NASA has changed radically within the last 2 years, not the least of which was the president's vision and the subsequent implications of the retirement of the shuttle in 2010. The acceptance of these things in the totality 2 years ago does somewhat restrict NASA in its flexibility and the applications of resources and the setting of priorities. I think I recognize, hopefully we will never find ourselves in another situation like this with the reality of an accident like this. This being the second accident, I said that after the first accident also. But I think the reality is the world is a dynamic place, and NASA finds itself in a dynamic environment. And an acceptance of a static point in time and limitations of findings to implement to the letter of those findings is somewhat difficult to do 2 years down the road. And so, you know, that in that respect, one of the things I'm thinking of formulating is a lessons learned about the impact on the program. I think it's had an impact on the flexibility of the program and the flexibility of the management in responding to that and the application of resources and how they went off. Because consequently, they accepted all 15 recommendations as equal priority recommendations, which perhaps in retrospect they may not have wished to do.
Okay, thank you, Chuck, and appreciate that. Anybody else? If you do, you got 10 seconds because we're getting the high sign that we got to be out of here at 5 o'clock, and we got about 5 minutes to break down. Jim,
Dick, I got one. I don't know if it belongs in our report. It's not applicable to return to flight, but it's something that I'm going to mention. Confidence in NASA's efforts to reduce the foam liberation from the ET, as we heard earlier, is highly dependent on consistency in the manual foam application process at MISU. And I think this process deserves careful monitoring and process control for all future tanks, as well as just the return to flight tanks.
And Jim, we're going to put that in as an observation, yes. Okay, wrap it up, Vincent.
Thank you, Dick. Let me just announce the news conference will begin in approximately 15 to 20 minutes from now, and it will be in NASA auditorium. Let me also thank quickly the Holiday Inn for quickly accommodating the last-minute facility change from the Residence Inn to the Capitol Inn here. And lastly, I'll just encourage the members, if they can, to head out, and we'll get on the van, and we'll head back to NASA auditorium. And once again, I thank all of the task group members for all the hard work that they've done, and meeting is adjourned.